There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to talk to you about RotoBaller.com, proud sponsor of the show. I do my written content over at RotoBaller.com, and this podcast is a part of the RotoBaller Radio Network. So I want to let you know that football season quickly approaching with you guys. Win big in 2021 with RotoBaller.com's NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? RotoBaller's NFL Premium Pass and Draft Kit include rankings, projections, and cheat sheets for all formats. Get exclusive draft articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chats. Join in on the winning and take 50% off any Premium Pass. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% discount. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 404. Got a special guest returning to the show, one of the good guys, a guy that I like to talk to even outside of fantasy baseball, a guy I'm looking forward to seeing in a couple weeks and giving a nice bro hug to, because this is a guy that I consider a friend. You can find him on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter, Rob DiPietro. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Bubba. Thanks for having me back. I love this show. One of my favorite shows ever, and it's always good talking to you. And like you said, not only baseball but life.
Yep, it's good stuff. And I enjoy it because you're a genius when it comes to baseball, but you're an all-around good guy, so it's fun to chat it up with you whenever, wherever. So we'll definitely be doing that here in a few weeks, but tonight we're gonna, you know, fabs are done. It's kind of like Friday, you'll set your last offensive players, and then you just cross your fingers. That's where we're at now. So there's not a whole lot more analysis we can give you guys, really, outside of like just, you know, lock it in and pray type things. So we're going to kind of give a little look back on 2021. It's not over yet, obviously. We can kind of get an idea on a few things. Look at a couple big names. Obviously, there'll be many more names we'll talk about throughout the offseason because there's a lot of polarizing guys that did well, didn't do well, so on and so forth. And then we have some good listener questions from you guys. So we'll hit it all on the show. But Rob, let's kick it off. I know you won the draft champions overall last season, and you're doing pretty well just in your leagues in general this season. It's not over yet, but how are things looking for you? How many leagues are you winning? All of them? Because it feels that way sometimes.
No, thank you. Yeah. I have 15 leagues in the NFBC. Right now I'm in the top three in 12 of them. and my worst team is in fifth. So I'm just really happy that like none of my teams are duds, because I feel like sometimes that really sticks out, you know, when you just have one team that's kind of bad, and like it lets you weigh down any good success that you've had. So but things are close. In my one main event, I'm up 2 points, and you know, several stack categories that can just come down to the last day. You know, I've heard stories, you know, listening to you and Toby talking about, you know, main event that, you know, shift on the last day, you know, and it's to hear the story, now you're going to live it. And it's nerve wracking, you know. there's several like stack categories that are close. And I spent so much time on Fab just digesting that. And, you know, is it worth getting going up in K's if it's going to be, you know, whip or ERA? It's projecting teams around you for their strikeouts, you know, just like next, like hyper focused stuff that that was just making my heart pound. But, you know, so that was my first draft of the year in live in New York, the first main. So, you know,
that was in March, right?
Yeah, that was March 20th. Yeah. So crazy looking back at that team, you know, like just so many things that slowed my team down. But then, you know, I get to the bottom and I got like Jonathan India in the 28th round, you know, didn't drop him after his bad 2 weeks, thank God. And just guys like that have just been a godsend. But, you know, losing DeGrom hurt me. My ERA and whip just like plummeted. So this week, I'm, you know, no good starters out there. Kind of needed Ks, but really needed to protect some ratios. So I kind of went to like this, couldn't lose a point in save. So I kind of went with this like middle reliever strategy, hoping to get some wings off of guys, you know, playing on good teams that were in races. Just a lot of stuff like that. And in my second main event, which Paul Sporer is in first and kicking butt, it's such a deep league. We have six guys with over 100 points.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and six of them are in the top 120 in the overall. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And yeah, and I have 110 points in that league. In the league I'm winning, I have 104, you know.
Isn't it funny how that works?
Yeah.
It's freaking crazy, man.
Such a big difference. But you know, I can actually grab third. I've made this massive climb and save. So I've been up and it's just stuff I'm like that, you know, that you have to be conscious of and learn from. I was up so many strikeouts and I transitioned to, you know, first five closes, then six, then seven, then eight. Then this week was eight again with one starter in Giolito. And, you know, I went from like ninth to second. But I think third, but I needed to do it earlier. I think, you know, like if I would have done it earlier, I might have had a chance to get a couple more points. But just realizing those things and when you need to attack, you know, you got to like really put the time in and do math and like, you know, try to look at the teams around you and see who they're using at closers. But it's going to be interesting. I didn't draft enough power in that team, Bubba. It's like one of my weakest offensive teams, but I just nailed all the pitching, you know? So weak power. And I've been able to catch up a little bit. Like I grabbed Eloy off of, he was like my biggest fab bid this year. But still needed to draft a little bit more on that end. So
quick question for you. And because a lot of this will be open discussion, but you mentioned the power thing and you've been trying to get it off the wire and everything. And I had a lot of my teams, it was either like, even the good teams, you could tell I did really good in pitching or really good in hitting. Like it was rarely a combo of both. It was really frustrating, but you know, we always talk about how you can chase certain categories. And with all the home runs we have this year, you would think it would be an easy thing to chase. But I felt it was harder than ever because, like, okay, so you go after a guy like DJ Peters, but man, can he crush a batting average? Or if he goes in a slump, he doesn't help you anywhere. It's like at least when a guy goes in a slump, he still gets maybe some walks and steals some bags or something. How hard, like you mentioned it was hard. Do you think home runs was the hardest category, or was there a different offensive category that still, is it still steals to you? Or was it something else?
That's a great question. I think power, it was just in that one league where I felt like sometimes, and this is just like league dependent, you know, like some leagues just have a different shift in stats and it could also like dramatically alter the fabs. You look at the fab results and even the pricing on two different leagues is different, you know, people chasing different things. But I feel like the power was pretty decent. I finally like got into a better groove of you know, not going for like the bigger, splashier like fab bids, but just trying to chase playing time and lefty-righty matchups, or just gaining the at-bat edge, you know, and just like lay into power that way. But stolen bases was pretty interesting. I feel like in this last half of the year, a third of the year, I don't know, it's odd, but I've had a pretty good successful streaming with, you know, stolen bases, and it come from guys either that were 1 or 2 week guys or guys that ended up staying on my team, like Rafael Ortega, or last couple of weeks, you know, Nick Gordon has been great. so it's odd. I feel like the stolen bases hasn't been too difficult. I think if you have your stats in a certain spot where you can afford to take a chance on a guy who's not like a Jared Dyson, but you run the risk of like maybe a batting average drag. So you got to make sure you're good with all the rest of the categories too.
Yeah, I'm with you there. How are the rest of your teams doing? I know you're destroying us in Battle of the Pods, but you've been doing that since I think draft day started, and I've been sitting there right behind you. It's been just the two of us, and every time it's a ritual I have. Like I started about 2 months ago. Is like before I go to bed, and all the games are done. Like I refresh the page. Like, okay, so where are the standings? And I'm still in second somehow. So here we are. But I'm still like feels like 30 points away from Rob. So it's like I have no prayer just to hold off the rest. Obviously, draft the DCs. You can't do anything. And more injuries each week. I'm just like, oh god, it's gonna happen. I'm gonna log in one day. It's gonna be three. It's just gonna happen. And it's not. But you have destroyed us in that league.
Yeah, it's been pretty wire to wire. And like you said, it's been wire to wire at the top as well. Zach's been pretty consistently in that, you know, top four, Toby. It's, you know what? I was just looking at that, you know, and it's amazing because I'm not even winning like the plate appearance game. That's Toby and Dave are ahead of me on that. But I have at least 11 points in every category except the stolen bases, which I only have two in. But, first, actually, you know, when we were drafting, it was a big thing because I took Lynn in the fourth round after I already took Giolito and Bauer. And, you know, yeah. Like, oh, you're going to take all the pitch?
That reminds me now. You were drafting right next to me, and I think we recorded like a week or two before that. We were both big Giolito guys. And I took someone else thinking, Gio will come back to these guys. And the very next pick, boom. I'm like, this is how it's going to be. This is how it's going to be. Okay, let's go.
you and Toby sandwiched me. And I remember on your pod with him, you guys called me out as being a pain in the butt to draft with because it was just like right in the middle of you guys. It was, you know, but, you know, and that's the thing. We were like in, you know, a couple of drafts, you know, we did a couple of best balls. We kind of, you know who we're going to draft. And it's still, you know, it's still fun because we know our tendencies and it's just a game. It's a cat and mouse game, you know, of who you're going to pick, you know, and are you going to go contrarian? You know, are you psyching people out? But it's so I had Giolito, Bauer, you know, Lynn, they weren't all special for me, but I think, you know, having Lynn there just allowed for that, you know, when Bauer was gone, you know, it wasn't that bad. You know, I still had a guy who threw some innings. But it was the later round that really won me. Like I think Simeon, which was one of my highest player shares, I got him in the ninth, but in round 16 to 27, I got Justin Turner 16. Yuli at 17. And then this was, I think, kind of won the league. Like, just, I got Hand in the 18th and Melanson in the 23rd.
That Melanson one, he's leading baseball in saves.
Yeah, that Melanson one was, and even Hand, you know, just what he gave
before
me.
Before he fell apart, yeah.
Right. And his run was huge because then you could just bench him once he's not pitching well, you know. But, and then rounds 21, Adames, round 22, Votto, round 25, Duvall, and 27, Bader. So, but Logan Webb and, you know, pick 493 and Graveman at pick 583. I think those, like, you know, you get those couple of picks that can really just, you know, move the needle so much, like, especially like a Kendall Graveman, you know, get you 12 saves and really good numbers, you know, out of nowhere, you know.
Yep. The Logan Webb one's a big one. And I looked back at some of the best balls that we did early and the ones that I'm doing well in are winning. I have Logan Webb and all those. I know we all talked about him. Like, this is the guy. If he gets his chance, like, as a Giants fan, I've seen him. I'm like, the pedigree's there. And did I think he'd be this good? No. But, like, he was definitely going to be a guy that was going to get you innings late in the year that can be quite productive. So, can't wait to see where he goes next year.
Oh, I know. That's going to be really interesting because I remember getting excited because in the offseason, recognizing that he did that pitching change, the pitch mix change, you know, toward the end, and it like carried into this year. But you know, you were forecasting, all right, well, if that sticks, you know, can he be better? And the way I drafted my draft champions team was a lot of just huge pitching runs in the later on of the draft, you know, like in the middle, I was just trying to nail PT, you know, get your outfield depth, which I think is huge. You know, having the ability to throw five solid outfielders mm-hmm. for both parts of the week is huge. So getting 9, 10, 11 guys who you really think, you know, look at OPS, look at, you know, stuff that might determine like a role, you know, and try to just stack that up. But, you know, that's what it was, just like a big run of pitching from like round 30 to 50, which just pound an arm and, you know, hopefully you land one or two like a Logan Webb. You know, when I won last year, it was Corbin Burns in the 400, you know, so that attracts me to take the time to maybe take your Alex Cobb that might throw a lot of innings and then also sprinkle in guys who, you know, can possibly blow up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, it's an interesting strategy because I hadn't done a lot of DCs prior to this. I've done best balls and stuff, but I prefer the DCs for a couple reasons. That I still get to set a lineup, so it makes you feel like you're still kind of playing the game. There's still strategy involved there. And it's a roto format where best ball is more of a points system and some different draft strategy there. I really enjoyed those DCs. And I did a lot of NFBC 50s just to kind of get my feet wet in the player pool. And I'm going to do a lot more of those again this year. I think they're great, and it's a great way to learn things. So I don't want to put that's the one thing I did last year, and I it sounds like you kind of did that too, where you started your main in March. All the leagues I drafted in March and closer to the season, I'm top five and above. And I think it's because it's all those early drafts we did, and it could easily change next year, of course. But I think it's that the early drafts we did, the prep we did, and like you felt so much more comfortable bobbing and weaving. Because obviously the later drafts, usually you're drafting with more talented player pool, of course, because these guys are all ready to rock and roll, and they've been doing their research too, and they're bigger money and everything. But you've done your stuff. You trust your stuff, and it works. So I think that's a strategy I'm going to instill again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just doing podcasts, you know, constantly looking at numbers, constantly being in drafts that run into each other or multiples at once. And I feel like when you do that, when you get to like big drafts or any draft and something doesn't go your way, you're less inclined to freak out and be like, oh, you know, like I feel like I did that. I tried to not do any of that this year, like never do an oh after you pick, like who cares? Like just go to the next guy on your list, you know, like just shake it off. Cause I felt like it happened to me 2 years ago in the short season main where I was just, you know, my first introduction to playing with sharks. And, you know, those picks that I thought I was going to set min picks on were being min picked before I got a chance to do it. And it was just, wow, you know. So it really got me in that mindset of like, you know, it can't mess you up in the middle of a draft. It can't sidetrack you into, you know, doing something irrational because your head, you know, is not in a good place because someone sniped Mike Minor from you, you know?
Yeah. I don't know who would do that. I don't know who would do that to you. I have no idea. No idea who would do that to you, but probably some guy that's mad that you took Lucas Giolito. Just saying. But
we probably had a lot of spite picks on each other, right? Yes. Just like constantly trying to get each other back from, well, he's going to pick this guy. I'm picking Breck Suter.
Yeah, screw you. But that was the worst part. Like at first I was like, I don't want to draft next to Toby because we record, like we know everything about who we like. Like we talk about it every week. And then I know your stuff. Like I said, we've drafted together already. We recorded together a couple times before. I'm like, this sucks. Like I would have rather been next to Dave or Maddie Wood or something, because they're great, but I don't talk to them as often, so it's kind of like a different animal. But
even like, you know, you mentioned Maddie, we the only 50 league I did was, yeah, you know, we're up at the top with you guys are first and second all year. I've been kind of trying to creep into that, but just sticking in the third place range. But it's, I think that was just also one of those where you're like, hey, I'm jumping in this 50. And we're like, oh, yep, cool. Like, let's go. Like, I'll do another. That's
exactly
draft.
What it was. Like, let's just do one real quick. We're bored. Let's do it. And I'm going to do a lot of that this year, I have a feeling. So,
yeah. And like staying in it, like you said, yep, you know, I had you guys on the pod after the season ended, forced me to just keep looking at things. I had Dave and Jake and Phil. And, you know, I had my first draft champion was November 14th. And I was like, what am I doing? You know,
yeah,
what am I doing with my life? I'm drafting a team this early, but You know, Mike the Mouth was like, come on, champ. Like, you know, what's the matter? You don't want to play with the big boys?
He doesn't twist like, anybody's arms. Nope, not Mike.
So I'm proud of that team because it's 60th overall right now.
That's awesome.
And that's another one where, like, I'm 140 points ahead of the overall, but there's a guy, like, 1 point ahead of me in the lead, in the league, you know. But it's crazy because I had Tanaka on that team. He retired, you know, Howie Kendrick. Just looking, I was like, oh, wow. But, you know, just other guys like getting Freddie Peralta in the 23rd, I think I got. And Grossman in the 35th, Votto in the 37th. It's just, it's crazy. But it's crazy how when you draft early, you're afraid, but you get these crazy edges if you're, you know, been tuned in, you know.
That's one of the biggest things. Like, the reason why I don't mind drafting early is you do get those huge edges if you know what you're talking about. At the same time, you mentioned it with Tanaka. Every single best ball, 50, whatever I did early, I have at least two roster spots, at least two, of guys that never even suited up this season. Or, like, they got injured in spring training. So there's either they got injured or they just didn't – they weren't on a team.
Right.
And I every league, I'm like, well, that kind of sucks. But, hey, that's like, the breaks. That's the breaks.
Like Rick Porcello.
Yeah, I have Porcello in a lot.
Of course, I know. Me too.
Yeah, I have a lot. Because how did he not sign anywhere? Like, what in the world happened? With all the injuries and all the pitching staffs. Like,
right?
What?
Has anyone looked into this? Like, has anyone Googled where is Rick Porcello? Because
did he just say, screw it, I don't want $4 million a year or something? Like, what is going on here?
It's right. Crazy. Every arm came back. Every arm that tried to came back and even failed got almost a lot of money, like Hamels. And I forgot.
Yeah, Hamels got $1 million for throwing like two innings for the Dodgers. Like, come on.
No. He must have been set. He was probably on an island and like, I don't want to do testing. I don't want to do this. And I'm just going to not play ball and live my life, you know?
Hey, you mentioned, because I know when I had you on the show before the season, and I know you've said it on your show and other shows as well, that last year your first main event was like a massive learning experience. You took you put your toe in the deep end, and you swam with the sharks, and you took some lumps, but you learned a lot, you said, and you did a few things, and now you're winning a main event, and you're the top in Sporer's main event, and all these things. So you obviously did something right. What do you think was the biggest changes you made to make yourself much more successful this go around?
I think I just made sure that it's funny. Like, I started off with trying to consume more than ever in terms of looking at different statistics, adding, different stats or a metric that I don't want to look at. And I ended up, it's funny, I ended up at one point just saying, I'm actually going to start eliminating things. I feel like sometimes you want to just start overloading metrics that maybe even like, you know, count twice if you don't really understand the stat or the metric or what it's describing. So I think I just made a conscious effort to like say, all right, like let's pick a specific amount of inputs and just stick to this. And then everything else, just try to dive deeper into a player. But I think really digesting things like, you know, the baseball forecast I've always read and I've always, you know, piled through that. But like reading The Process by Jeff and Tanner Bell, that was just, you know, introduced me to things that I had to understand to, you know, play at this level. And understanding those things and then applying it.
They're doing pretty good this year too. So yeah, they know what they're doing.
Right. And it's just, it's not stuff that it's going to make you feel overwhelmed. They're like just very intuitive things that they've putting data behind, you know, just stuff that when you read, you're like, oh, okay. Like that makes sense, you know? And when you try to apply it, it's just huge. Like just really understanding the dynamics of FAB. Jeff just recently wrote a great article on Fangraphs about the replacement level player and in 12 team lead and 15 team lead in NFBC and like what you can expect from 600 at bats from a pickup, like the most common ad. It was pretty wild because you really get to see like what you can add off the wire and what you can't add off the wire. But I feel like that was big in season management, FAB, not trying to chase big money guys, tried to make a big, I think my biggest ads were Manoa and Eloy, both in like the 230s.
Those paid off.
Yeah, those paid off. I think I had a crazy, Like Hiura might have been a mistake, but it was in that league I mentioned that it was very low in power, so it was one of those $100 to maybe try to get you know power there. But it's just really learning to control Fab and not go overboard with the Julian Merriweathers, you know, like don't chase that. And that's one thing I've learned by listening to the pods, you know, like Toby always mentioned how later on in the season you can really come across saves, you know, because people bow out, people stop competing in that category, and you know, you could just add, well, people may not just want saves, you know, and it's, you know, that's been huge, like getting guys like Finnegan and Flora at the end of the year, and Colome when he got reinserted, and you know, so you could find it. So it's just paying attention to those things and really, you know, I have a passion in competition, you know, like I want to do good, you know, I want to, you know, put my best effort forward. And I think that anyone can not know all the stats and the skill and the metrics and models and stuff, but if you could dedicate time and like really know where to put that time, I think you could do really well. You know, like if you just really have the urge to, like, you know, that the eye of the tiger, like Rocky says, like, yeah, just want to beat everyone, you know? So you just spend time like absorbing podcasts or articles or figure out your own stuff. You know, I think Matt Modica gave me the best of like advice that one time that we talked. He's like, you're doing well and you're going to do well. He's like, but when you start doing your own stuff, you'll really blossom, you know? Yep. And it's true. You know, when you can absorb everything and learn and then say, this is the way I'm going to do it. I think that's better than, you know, everyone wants the quick answers and who should I start? But then you don't, you know, learn why. But
why are you starting them?
Right. 100%. That's the thing. And that's how you get better. That's, I guess I should have just said that, just those three words instead of the 14,000 I said, but.
Well, no, yeah. it makes total sense. Cause like I even do like my DFS shows and I have chats that I have and everything. And guys just say, or even for season long, like, hey, do I make this trade? Do I start this guy? And I keep telling them, I'm like, well, what's your process behind this? Like, I'm trying to teach you things so you don't need to come to me after a while. Like, you need to know what you're doing. And like, I'll even tell people, they'll go like, okay, I'm using this from this site, this from this site, this from this site. I said, that's fine. But in the end, pick one that works for you, because a lot of crossover becomes almost too much. Like you kind of said earlier, like you get too many noises going on. You can't figure it out. So if you're not going to make your own, that's fine. Totally fine. But I'd recommend finding one you really trust. Like if it's Vlad Sedler's, roll with it. The dude's awesome. But don't like go use Vlad's and then go use, you know, Pianowski's and then go use Jeff Erickson's, because they're going to be some weird crossovers that you're going to find yourself in the middle of a draft going, ugh. So find what works for you, but learn from it. I love how you said that. That's one of the biggest things I tell people is, you know, in a perfect world, I can just do podcasts and never do anything else again, because you guys don't need my help with things. And I can just talk baseball with people and I'm great. Like that sounds phenomenal to me. So learn how to do it and become better. So,
Or go to the tout result at 9 and see what everyone really pays.
Yeah.
You can do that like too. Go to the first thing that's available publicly, you know, and just take a look at it, you know.
All I know is in the tout league I was in, if you try to use those results every week for your fab, you are lost in the freaking woods. Because I
some of them.
Oh man, there were so many weeks I'd be bidding on stuff going, what?
Yeah.
What just happened? But maybe it's just a learning curve in that league I got to figure out. But it was just like, it was different than any other league I've ever been in. I'll tell you that much. Interesting. So yeah, it was very, very interesting indeed. some other interesting things this year, Rob, starting pitching. We know, like, you know, Pocket Ace has been popular lately. You mentioned in the Battle of the Pods, you took 3 in the first 4 rounds. I know I went heavy. Toby usually goes heavy. Some guys are saying they're not going to this year because it's not like it's kind of spread out. And this year was weird, best way I could say it. A lot of injuries, a lot of supposed aces like Luis Castillo and stuff weren't, they were really bad at times. Gio wasn't even as good as he could have been, stuff like that. How are you approaching starting pitchers next year? I know it's a long ways away. This answer can obviously change tomorrow, but at this point in time, I'm like, I did a mock draft a week ago. I had the 11th pick out of a 12 teamer and I went Burns, Buehler. I'm gonna take these two and roll. Nice. Now, do I love it?
I love it.
We'll see. But I know I can piece the bats together and sleep really good knowing I got Burns and Buehler. And if they stay healthy for a year, you got no chance. But you never know. So how are you approaching it?
Yeah, it's fascinating because I think, as I am starting to prepare for next season and just looking at, you know, getting time to, you know, it's so funny because, you know, we kind of just look at these snapshots of stats, you know, and then when you kind of just bring up the season long and you're looking at it and you're like, oh, this guy pitched 180 innings, huh? Like, it's just, you know, you kind of lose yourself a little bit, like, in the who should I add? Who's got, you know, who's going to be a power add? And then you don't really look at the full season stats a lot of times. But so like guys like Zach Wheeler and Alcantara, I feel like I really have to, you know, do a deeper dive in and see, like, are these guys going to be the next guys taking a step up, you know, into the round two, round one? It should be interesting. But I love what you just said. I think that people are going to be heavily invested in Corbin Burnes in the first round this year, for sure. And I think within reason, 100%, you know. I'd love to get a few shares of him if I can early, because who knows, you know, by main event, if DeGrom is out, you know, Cole has been a little up and down, still very solid, you know, still a guy I consider taking in the first by far. But, you know, I don't know, Burnes might come right behind these guys and be in there and be in that mix, like Bieber kind of did, right? You know, Giolito wasn't so great this year, but it's really interesting. I think you see a lot of success in older pitchers, and, you know, I think there was a lot of hesitancy to roster guys for, you know, maybe lack of innings, but one of the guys that you mentioned, Charlie Morton, you know, like that you had in the write-up, it's just – you take a look at what this guy's doing this year, and it's just fascinating. You know, his fastball velos is as fast as 2018, I think. You know, and the numbers against the fastball have been better, or batters against it, you know, than the last 2-3 years. And, you know, and he's already locked in next year. So, you know, he was a guy going from anywhere from 90 to like 110, right? Does he now climb back up? Or does he stay there? You know, that was a fun range this year. The Gausman, Musgrove, Charlie Morton, you know, Pablo Lopez at the deeper end of that spectrum. But there was a lot of good pitchers in that range. And I felt like when I was drafting, it was, you know, go pocket aces or at least one good pitcher in the first two rounds and then attack in those rounds. So I guess, you know, I'd really, I don't know. It's odd because when I'm trying to picture who might be in that range this year, and it seems different. It seems like a different kind of pitcher, you know, like, yeah. Does a Stroman go up into that range? You know, the 110, I guess, where it depends where close. He signs, you know,
close, yeah.
Because he's been sensational minus the K's, but he's a good pitcher. You know, you can tell he's competitive. He's, you know, how high is too high for him? How far does Darvish fall? You know, where does a guy like Dylan Cease move up to?
Dylan, you know, Anthony DeSclafani. I don't think he goes that high, but he's going to move up for sure.
Right, right. And I think it's just going to be like, what do you want to tackle? Are you going to go for, you know, K guys? Are you going to go for innings? Are you going to try to mix both? You know, some guys like Tyler Molly and Sean Manaea, like how where do you put these guys? Are they SP2s? Or are they SP3s? Or if you go heavy on bats, can they be an SP1 for you? I don't know. It's interesting. So when I look at that group, that, you know, that same range as where Gausman and Musgrove was this year, that doesn't look as appealing as it does this year. So, you know, and it's just funny because, like, you know, we're doing a draft on Monday, and, like, you know, you're basically creating ADP, I guess. Yeah, you know,
I,
like,
can't wait to see it. I'll tell you that much. I would be glued to seeing that stuff. That's for sure.
I know, it's fascinating. You know, it's just like, because it's good, because it's just whatever you're thinking at the time. You know, and it's gonna be interesting. I'm doing it with a partner, so, you know, it'll be good to like at least get another person's sense of where the market is for these players, you know?
Yeah, it'll be real interesting to see, because I think there's a lot of different opinions on the starting pitcher landscape. It is deeper, it feels like, or at least it's not like last year where it was like three guys up top, and then you had like another six, and then it kind of had groupings. It seems more kind of evenly spread out for, like, you know, maybe 20 to 30 dudes at some point. There's still the elite guys, but there's like a group where you're just like, And like, okay, we saw the short season, so we were concerned with innings and stuff. This year, well, now most guys just did their thing this year. Are they going to have a step back because of the short year the year before? Because, you know, it's maybe they didn't have an impact this year, but it might impact them next year type things. A million questions can go through your head on see how this works. I think he's got to draft and pray type thing and things are fine. But I know I gotta do much better at the strikeout department. That was one that got me in a couple leagues in a big, big way. So that'll be
shortage,
fun,
a yeah. shortage of it. Yeah.
That got me big time. We couldn't all be Phil Dussault and grab a Robbie Ray and Carlos Rodon. So like, good God, like, you know, he's awesome. Like, I want to joke, but people don't always know I'm joking. I'm like, you can't run any better. Like, the dude literally got every freaking, like, but he ran good because he's smart at what he does. That's why I got to, like, clarify to people. But he literally hit on, like, all these guys that were mispriced, basically, and they all stayed healthy, and they all just freaking crushed. It was right. just, like, he literally checked off every box of, like, okay, well, I got the value pick, check. Oh, wait, they stayed healthy all year, pretty much, check. Oh, and they crushed all year, check. Like, he just got the whole freaking thing, and it's just like, oh, what a beast. What an absolute beast.
Right, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, like, you know, a lot of his teams, you'll see, not only did he diversify and still nail things, but
yeah.
those later picks, you know, the team I mentioned, my second main, where I was so ahead of K's and wins to start off, it was because of, you know, that hitting, you know, late, hitting Robbie Ray, hitting Dylan Cease, even for like a little of a Kikuchi run. But if you get, I feel like, you know, it was a little bit of a conscious effort in that second main to, like, really, I think, instead of focusing on a lot of pitching up top, to just make sure I had 9, 10, you know, maybe good starters at the start of the draft and keep them. I feel like it was times where maybe I could have upgraded a bat or something like that, but if it was a pitcher where I thought, like, you know, this guy's got a chance to pitch 150, 160 innings and give me decent numbers, I think I'm just going to, you know, keep him on my team rather than trying to cycle through it, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you. So we talked starting pitchers, and we kind of hit on it earlier. You mentioned you can get saves later in Fab for cheaper and all this stuff. It's been a weird year, and I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. I guess it's the way of the world, like multiple closers, always revolving door on certain teams that just don't want to spend for it. I've compared it many times. It's basically NFL now, where it's running back. You have two running backs in each team and stuff like that. There's not a horse anymore. So I see this not changing anytime soon. So my strategy this past year is to get at least one of the big dogs. Like, I had like 8 or 9 guys, if not 2, but I wanted at least one. And I think that's going to be 100% in play for me again this next year. How do you think you're going to approach it? Because, yes, you can get saves later, but I think getting those guys early allows you to wait and not panic on those early saves to get them later. How do you plan on approaching it?
Oh man, it's like seeing how I was able to get so much late saves this year. And I still want to say in my head, like, I'm not going to rush it up top. But then I look at some teams where I've been successful in, and I didn't have to chase it all year, like TGFBI, you know, 4th overall. I hate her Diaz. I never had to chase it. You know,
it's a big difference, man.
It's a huge difference. You know, yeah. Huge. I mean, even on that team too, like, just not having to chase catcher. I have JTR and Sal P. You know, like, both of them.
What?
Yeah,
you have both of them.
Yeah, that was a great draft. I had DeGrom,
that's
Scherzer.
Not nice to your league.
I had DeGrom, Scherzer, and then I did JTR in the 4th, and I think Sal P in the 8th, and then sandwiched in between that was Hayter Diaz. And I was cool. I got pocket aces, pocket catchers, pocket closers. And I never had to chase that, you know, that stuff around all year, you know? So
are you one that likes to get those catchers earlier than later? Because, you know, there's so many guys that say, screw it, I'm just going to, you know, wait.
Yeah, I am definitely, you know, I had a decent amount of JTR. I love the steals. You know, I love that steals, good average, a catcher, such a huge edge. And I think, like, he's going to be a pretty good bargain this year, I think, especially if they DH and he gets a ton more at-bats. It'd be pretty interesting. But I do. Like, I have a lot of Contreras and Vasquez, like, in that 10, round 10 to 12 range this year. You know, I did a lot of Austin Nola. I like having those catcher options early, guys who are just going to, you know, play a lot more. And I think that's a big edge to have, instead of scrambling around, you know.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. Like, This year, more than ever, though, I'll give people some credit. You could stream catchers, but do you want to keep spending fab on catchers every week? I don't think I want to, because in the end, how many of those guys are helping you in the like multiple categories that you can get with, say, you know, a certain middle infielder that gets, like, say, Adalberto Montes, he gets called up again. Like, you need that money for him compared to a catcher type thing. So, right. Yeah, I'd like to get those guys we can lock in and rock and roll, especially guys like JTR and Salvi. You mentioned it earlier, and, you know, Zimmerman and those guys talk about it. The plate appearance game, you ain't going to find many better anywhere in baseball. Like, right. If you wait on a catcher, you are sacrificing massive amounts of plate appearances in Absolutely. A big, big way, because they platoon a lot too.
Such a big point. But yeah, so getting back to the closer thing, you know, I think in 2019, there was, I think, 22 closers that had 20 or more saves. This year, there's exactly 22 closers with 20 or more saves. And the guys who had 10 or more was only off by, there's four more this year than it was in 2019. So it's interesting. It's and if you go through the list, you know, so in prepping for my offseason drafts last year, the first thing I did was bullpens, because in draft champions, like our friend Toby, you know, he likes to speculate later on in draft champions and just make sure the attack or the bats and pitching first. And so anyway, just I kind of have like the same thinking in the draft champions. Like, I just want to, you know, not spend too much at closer. So the first thing I dipped into is closers and their ARB status, their free agent status. And I think it was so big because it really helped me understand what bullpens might be like, you know, led me to Kendall Graveman early. And just looking at the list now, you see Jansen, Iglesias, Ian Kennedy, Kimbrel, Colome, they're all free agents. Kendall Graveman, these guys are all have 10 saves or more. So, you know, Kenley Jansen, he's really wild. Like, even without all the save chances for the Dodgers, he still puts up 37 saves, you know? Yep, it's crazy. And it is crazy. And what's crazy is that his, you know, he's walking a little more, but he's throwing faster than ever. You know, his skills haven't really looked horrible. You know, when you look at it, you're like, oh, you could it's the same old pitcher. Like, we were kind of worried about the K-minus walk is down because the walk rate went up. But, you know, 37 to, yeah. And this is the thing. You're going to look at a team like the Dodgers. They're going to win
over 100 games. So even if it's like saves a third of the games, that's 30 saves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, I think guys like that are going to be the guys that get a lot of the attention, you know, because he always gets a bunch of scrutiny, you know, whether he's gonna, you know, and I feel like he fell into a great pocket this year of drafting. He kind of fell behind the Chapman, behind the Iglesias, like a little ahead Rosenthal and Presley. But, you know, I really like when I have a guy like Hader or Hendrick. You know, Hendrick's been a monster, you know, like, 0.75 whip. Come on. Like, he strikes out everyone. And I think that, you know, like, he's on the perfect manager to be the only guy, I think, to have a chance at 50 because, you know, like.
They traded for Kluber and they still made Hendricks the lone guy. They didn't even try to split it. Like, it's still Hendricks' job, which, you know, a lot of other coaches or managers are like, oh, we got two elite close. Because Kimbrel was right there when he got traded. Yeah. He was right there in saves and everything. And then he could have eaten a lot of teams and be like, yeah, you can be our guy. Or we can go 1A, 1B. Not with La Russa.
Not with La Russa. And, you know, that's like the one good thing about him. That's being the one manager. Thing. Yep. It's like, because you can, you know, and he used them in like, you know, a lot of two innings or inning and two thirds and came back the next day. And you're like, what is this guy doing? And he's like, just let him pitch. You know,
he's a beast. You know, your players and he knows them.
Right. Right. So, you know, I feel like if you have the opportunity to get your hands on a Hendricks, Hader, you know, Iglesias, I love, you know, those guys are big, you know. Chapman, I think, is going to be interesting because you could definitely, the skills waning a little bit, but not, you know, not something to be like, oh, he's going to slip so far because, he'll still be on the Yankees. I think he's still got enough talent to like switch his pitch mix a little bit and become, you know, if you're losing velo, to try to alter that. But, you know, how far does he fall? You know, and does he just now become a bargain? Or is he a guy like we were wondering, like Kenley Jansen? Ah, you know, it's like his skills are deteriorating, and next year, 44 saves and a 1.4. And we're like, why do we ever doubt him? Yep. You know? You know?
True. It's true. It's like, there's the way I look at it, and again, we have a long ways to discover, to discuss before like a big time draft season, but even with his waning skill sets, he's on the Yankees. They're going to win a boatload of baseball games. Like, why are we going to get too fussy about him like people do with Kenley Jansen, who I drafted in a lot of places because people got fussy? And it's like, grab one of these guys, even if they slip a little bit in their production, it's still great production. Instead of waiting on, you know, what committee the Giants throw out there next year, even though Doval looks pretty awesome. Oh, but like teams like that, as an example, or the A's or something, like, why play that game when I could go at least lock in probably 25 to 30 saves? If not, if they catch fire, 40, like, instead of play the game of a guy that might have the job for a month or two. That's right. The question I always have. Like, I understand there's draft costs and, you know, I might be passing on this middle infielder or this, that, and the other, but my goodness, like, the way you have to go and fight for saves, why are we getting so nitpicky? And it's crazy, because it is. You're so right. People start to, like, look at this, look at that. And we talked about it even with Javi Baez. Like, there's certain hitters that they do it to. And so it's just like, guys, look at the big picture here. Like, what are we doing? But I guess it's better for us, I guess.
Right. And also, too, who knows? Maybe the guys who split, like Stecken Rider and Seawald, right? I know there's Castillo's in the picture now, and next year you got Ken Giles, and who knows what? Like, they're just gonna have a super pen, the Mariners. But you know, if you get a split guys like that, you know, are your three closers maybe one guy, you know, like a Hader with two guys who split, you know, and you're still getting into that 50 save range right off the bat? It'll be interesting. You know, I think guys like Giovanni Gallegos are going to be super interesting to evaluate and see where they fall. You know, do people think that Hicks, you know, entered the picture again? You know,
well, it'll be interesting. Jordan Hicks is on the AFL roster. They want to get some work out of him because he missed most of the years. The Cardinals are sending him to Arizona, so we'll see him in a couple of weeks. But if he throws well just in that alone, can you imagine these, like, December – can you imagine these December and January drafts before we get to like spring training with a guy?
I know
everything.
I know, because like in theory, if you looked at it right now and you thought Gallegos was the guy, mm-hmm. you know, he's probably a top 100 pick, right? Easy, you know, easy, like, yeah. So he's interesting. Got a guy like Jordan Romano, you know, like, great. Again, a team that wins, does he stay the guy? I think he's earned the right to be you know? And Montoyo kind of, you know, I know he likes to rotate guys as well, but those guys, maybe it was because of lack of effectiveness from Hand and Dolis, you know, and all the guys they brought in had tried to maybe go into that. They all, Soria, they all faltered, you know, so, but there's some interesting closer that, like, out there that I think, you know, how much are people in on Jake Hagee, right? You know, he's again winning team, and they're like, even if he's used sparingly, you know, he should be a good for 20, you know.
Yep.
Very interesting stuff.
But gonna be fun.
I like Michael Fulmer too. Like, he's a guy all year I've been really intrigued by and added and dropped a whole bunch of times. But there's times where he came off the IL with an injury and, you know, he went right back to high leverage. So they seem to like him. Again, another tandem with Soto, but very interesting. I can't wait to. I'm getting all hopped up draft right now.
I know this is fun, and you get to draft on Monday, so you're gonna have a lot of fun with this. The last kind of, I guess, strategy question I'm gonna chat up with you here. We mentioned how power could have been an issue at times. People always point to stolen bases and other things. What offensive stat are you more focused on for the 2022 season after this 2021 season? They like sunk in. Are you making a valid point to go get more home runs in your draft? And if so, how do you think that'll affect? Because not all home run hitters steal bases, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I think that. So, in one of my mains, I tried this strategy of getting some steals up front, but not trying to force a lot of it, and then just getting a lot of 8, 6, 10, you know, 8 guys, you know, who can give me a whole bunch of smattering of steals late. And it kind of didn't work like that because, again, I got lost on power, but I feel like it's so, I feel like obviously power relates to everything else, but I feel like, I think we were talking about pre-pod, I feel like I'm overweighing bad strikeout rate, you know? And I think you just may have to just knock it down on, you know, how you view players, because they are striking out obviously a lot more, but the guys who are striking out a lot are really, you know, good players, you know? So I think if you can, if you're not playing with enough, I guess, approach to that risk, maybe you lose out on, you know, power still with just Javi Baez, you know, 33 and 18. Like, I know you got him in a bunch of spots later on because people weren't on him. And just getting that combination is fascinating, you know, like just because he strikes out a lot, like Luis Robert, you know, got that big flag on him because, oh, he's a big swing and miss guy and the contact is weak. But I mean, does it really matter? You know, yeah. He's actually gotten better. You know,
he's gotten much better. Yeah. Since he's
gotten
back.
Much better. And even with, you know, you could tell like he's not maybe running as fast because, you know, he tore his hip, you know, but he's still pounding the ball, you know, a couple of notches under his max EV, but he still rips it.
Still hits 450 foot bombs. So I think he's good.
He's yeah. really fascinating, Bubba. I think he's one of those guys who this year I thought can be drafted in the third round and be like a first round value. And I think he might even be undervalued this year again.
I think he will be, because I think one thing you hit on there is he's not running that much, but I think a full off season of letting that hip really heal. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he's running again. Like, part of me hopes he takes it easy in spring. That's all I'm going to say. Because I think he can.
Right.
I think he can still get you 20 plus bags next year once he feels healthy again. He's still super young. Like, I know who knows how bad it is, but I hate to break it to people. The younger you are, usually the better you heal up for the most part. And they got technology right. that'll help him heal up pretty darn good. So
right.
they rushed him back. He wasn't supposed to play this year. Remember, like when that injury happened, him and Eloy. And remember, they had a funeral for Eloy. It felt like. Yeah. And they're hanging up his jersey and all kinds of stuff. But
me and Jenny Butler had Luis Robert in our tag team league right now is a three-way tie for first. 103, 103, 103.
Ooh.
Fascinating league. Like six people with, you know, six teams over like 98 points. It's like wins. There was like, it's crazy. Like the 14 team had 74 and like the second place team at like 79. It's so wild. But when Robert got hurt, again, like just one of the things I learned this year, just from paying attention to the main event league I was in and talking to guys like Phil, is just that, and reading Jeff, you know, just at bat, it's just, you know, you got to let go of guys. You just have to. Like, if you want to compete, you got to get rid of bias. You got to really think about logic and real injuries and be like, you know, it's why Phil dropped, Phil, you know, Jacob Grom, because he's like, you know, he's not coming back and I don't need him. So it's just you have to get that thing in your head like, I'm moving on. And so I was all in that mood. And I said, Jenny, I think we got to drop this guy. We're going to have to use this spot to stream. And she's like, no, you know what?
He wasn't supposed to play.
I think you're right. He's not coming back. And then we were even though still texting like, oh, but man, like, what if he does? He could help us, you know, but like, no, this is the smart move, you know? And then, you know, I forgot who beat us to getting him back. But, you know, when it kind of looked like he was going to be back and it's just, he's been a beast in hindsight. Yeah, we should have kept him. But at the time, like you said, he wasn't supposed to come back.
Yeah, and, what are you going to do?
You know, you think hip, you think torn hip, you think like things like Bo Jackson. And you're going to play sports again.
They made it sound very, 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 very bad.
Right, right.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame anybody for dropping him because they basically waved the flag on him. Like, hey, yeah, we'll see you in 2022. Right. And little did you know because, well, no one knew. So. Yep. That's the crazy part about it. The list of players, we're going to talk about that next time. I'm going to get you back on the show here pretty soon.
Cool.
We're going to get into the listener questionnaires. We've got some really good ones, so I don't want to like rush through those. I'd rather just talk about these and keep talking strategy here.
100%.
It's been some good stuff here. So I'm going to get to those, and we'll kick it off with Joe McHugh. He asks, who is Rob targeting between pick 200 and 300 and some super early DCs? Like, hypothetically, if he were drafting this weekend, that sort of thing. I'm guessing he's in your league that's coming up.
He is. Yeah. it was definitely a little push, you know. And you know what? I'll say this. I'll say, look at the guys who went 200, 300 this year, and look how many great hitters came from that part of the draft, you know. And it's just, who is going to be those next guys? Who's going to be like the maybe the next Joey Votto that you can get at 280? You know, is it a Heimer Candelario? Like, is you know, he's kind of shown little growth, but is it enough growth to project him to be taking a next step? And
I'm already excited if Candelario's going to 200 to 300. Oh man, I'm way too much Candelario.
Well, that's the thing. Like, are people going to project Torkelson coming up earlier? True. And where does Candelario play? You know, who know how much does Miggy? There's a lot of questions to a guy like him, and I figure, like, I don't know, like, some guys are just jotted down to, like, where do you think they're going to go? Like, Luis Urias, like, he's had a great year, great growth, you know, power, you know, not too much speed as we thought, but, again, on a team, though, like, the Brewers, they just love to, like, they're almost like the Rays, you know, just ton of depth, ton of versatility, and guys, they shift around, but I feel like, just look at those guys. I feel like this year there was a lot of McCutcheon, right, in that 220 range, and you were like all over him when you saw him at 220. It was like, yep, I'll take him. I'll take him.
Easy,
you
know, easy game.
Yeah, easy game for that. Just look at, you know, like, skills and at bats. You know, just ton of what you think is going to be falling in for at bats.
Sure. Like, I'm just scrolling. I've got the ADP up for the main event in March through April from this past year, just going through 200 to 300. AJ Pollock was in there. Look what he's done. Like, it's tough, though, because he doesn't play every day, so that's frustrating. But he's in there. Austin Riley was going at 226. Like, that ain't happening again. Jake Cronenworth is in this range.
I have just so much of Riley, too, like, because Riley's of that.
Like, that was a steal. Austin Hayes, pick 240. Nate Eovaldi, 242. Jorge Polanco, 245. So I'm not going to keep going down this list, but basically what Rob is saying, this is where, this is again going back to some of the talks earlier in the show, is this is why you can kind of take those pitchers early. This is why you were able to take two starters, two closers, and two catchers, and then get guys like this later on and still put a good team together, because there is talent everywhere, and it needs to kind of, I think, be emphasized when people are always like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do this. Well, you can do anything if you know the player pool. Yes. And you're willing to maybe reach, because now you're kind of, maybe desperate, not the right word, but you do need to eventually hit this spot, and if you miss it, then you might be in trouble.
Right.
But not taking it early doesn't make you in trouble. That's the kind of thing. So, like, literally just scrolling back through the first 50, I didn't even go any deeper. Like, imagine getting Jorge Polanco at pick 240.
And imagine that. Right. And he's another guy like him.
And he'll still be there probably, because I don't think people believe in it.
Yeah, no, if he's still there, then people are lost. But
it's such a deep position still. Such a deep position. Like, you can only take so many shortstops, right?
Right. And he was a guy, like, that I identified, all right, like, I'm not getting Bo early or Tatis early, and I don't want to reach after that. So I'll go for a Simeon. He was on all my team this year, and it was a lot of Jorge too, because he was, like you said, he said, all right, well, what if it's just his ankle? You know, his ankle's bad. He could return to 2 years ago, which was solid, and then he gave you even more, where he's like, whoa, you know, he fascinating. But yeah, just so many guys in that range where you just, you know, I feel like that's the boring but beautiful lane, you know.
Robbie Ray, pick 260.
Yeah, you know, like, when everyone was chasing a Kalenic, you know, and Adele, and, you know, you just go, I'll take the guy with 550 at-bats, you know, I'll take the guy with the proven track record. It's just the better percentage play, you know?
That's how I've always been. It's like, okay, yeah, would it be fun to have a Kalenic be on your team if he goes nuts? Yeah, it would be. But A, when's he going to play? B, when's he actually going to go nuts? Because it's going to probably not be right away. So that's going to sting. It's like, it's one of those, it's prove it to me. Like, Wander Franco, he'll be a fun discussion point this year. He's proven it to me enough where it's like, okay, he might be worth a pick. Now, as high as he's going to go, probably not for me. But I get it there, because at least we know what he's going to do. And he's still young. And I think he is that guy. But
right, because you watch it and you see it. You know, he passes the eye test instantly. Like a Kelnick, he still looks a little, you know, off, a little
rough around the edges.
Right, right. But so like, who's another guy? Like during the draft, Ethan and I got on Zach Wackman because he loved to pick him. We got into it. We made a friendly bet on Justin Turner or him who would have a better year, you know, and I still ask him about that. But, you know, it's just little things like that where you just – you can take a boring guy who's, you know, who you know what to do. But a guy who I thought, like, if he hit his upside would be, you know, like in that range, if Kelnick even was a little better, was Tyler O'Neill, you know. And because saw, you know, you saw speed, you saw power, and, you know, that's when you, you know, I don't know. I feel like a lot of my draft champion team too, like – get those at bats, get the surefire guys, and then when there's this guy that's peeking out that says his skills scream out, even his teammate Harrison Bader, you know, like later on in the draft, take a chance on guys like that where they can go 20-20 and just give you, you know, a ton of value, you know. So, yeah, Joe McHugh, that's look in that range, and you'll find plenty of good nuggets. Let's see who gets the best ones of them all.
That'll be fun. Ryan Ireland asks, the way too early. What positions do you potentially see depth at for 2022 that you could see yourself fading early in drafts? So is it shortstop again? Is it is there a certain position that stands out to you as a deep position at this point in time?
Not too deep into that yet, but yeah, we just mentioned, you know, that shortstop list, you know. And even if you bring up the auction calculator on Fangraphs, right, for shortstops in a 15-team league, right? You can see Bichette, Turner, Tatis, Semien, Polanco, Baez, Brandon Crawford, Tim Anderson, Bogart, and Story. So see 8, 9, 10, Anderson, Bogart, Story, guys who are going way ahead of, you know, Brandon Crawford and Javier Baez. And then you go even deeper, 11, 12, and 13 is Correa, Chris Taylor, Swanson, Jake Cronenworth, Willie Adames, Jazz Chisholm. Like, yeah, that's deep, you know. If I... Yeah. You know, Ahmed Azario, you know, is you know, he might be another great player to get at pick 200, you know.
Definitely. Him, Nicky Lopez, right, like that. Right.
You know, these guys are going to get at bat, and they've proven, you know, they've taken a good skill leap. I could definitely see shortstop being 100% a spot where you can, you know, fall back on. I think, you know, second base is pretty interesting because, you know, you got guys like Max Muncy, you know, like if you play him there, or, you know, Jonathan India is I think is going to be really coveted going forward, but it's also a kind of top heavy, you know, there. So yeah, I think shortstop is a spot. Third base is really odd. It's always an odd spot. I felt like I found myself playing guys there that weren't typically in my head, like third base profiles, like Gene Segura, kind of Aleffa, you know, guys were like Luis Urias, you know, just guys where you're like, oh, well, this guy's giving me speed and power, but it's not your typical third base slugger. You know, if you didn't get guys like Devers or Machado or Austin Riley, you know, you were probably playing guys who can do multiple things at that spot. And then outfield, you know, Bubba, like outfield is the spot where I feel like that's where you get your edge on like early draft champion teams, you know, really just get into the playing time and get into the depth charts of teams and really just try to take your best guess who's going to get more.
Yeah. That outfield, it's such a great point with the outfield. Cause like I said, this year was the first year I did a kind of a good amount of more the DCs and FBC 50s. Usually it's mainly best balls where it's, you know, it is what it is at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And the outfield position, it's five positions each week. Like it doesn't sink in at first. You're thinking, oh, the outfield's so deep. It's so deep. I'm going to go to this. It's five positions. And when you start getting injuries, it gets harder and harder to fill five positions.
Right.
So it's such a great point you make to make sure you have, you know, you were saying 10, 11. Like it's no joke. It's definitely one like that just outside of like starting pitchers. You want a deep starting pitcher realm because you got to have those innings. Well, you need those at bats in the outfield. It's a phenomenal point.
And write down like hard targets. You know, I felt like that was my best, like best thing I did is I had a little like piece of paper and it was like first base, second base, and I kept a little tally. And you know, I had firm numbers that I wanted to get to 11 outfielders. You know, like through multi eligibility or not. You know, like if you or if you're just a strict outfielder. If they qualify outfielder, you know, I want this amount. And like, if you have a good discipline like that, where you can, you know, make sure you cover your bases, make sure you get four or five multi-eligible guys, you know. And I feel like, and on my best draft champions, my outfield is like every week, it's just like, what do I do? Like, I would spend time on it. Like,
great problem to have.
Exactly. But it was a problem where I was like benching, you know, I have Austin Hayes, Brian Reynolds, Rosarena Grossman, Tyler O'Neill, Avi Sale, Grichuk, Brantley, man. Even Taylor Ward at one point,
yeah,
where he was on a roll. And, you know, I had guys like Robles too, but it was weeks where I'm like, well, where do I start? Grichuk made it easier when he started losing playing time, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, all right, well, that became easier. But
yeah, but you know how many people didn't have the depth you have that still had to play Grichuk?
Right.
That's right. The problem right there. Like that, right, in a nutshell, those extra, like, say just 3 games a week, you had a guy getting 4 at-bats a day, big.
Right. Huge. So yeah, outfield is huge, you know, like even if you don't attack it early, just keep drafting it, you know, like keep drafting guys who you can put in the outfield. It's so, you know, it's such a spot where you need to just hog it, you know, hog it all day.
Yeah. One thing with you mentioned third base, that's always one that gets me where I kind of feel like I need, like, if I can get a JRAM, I'm so happy. It's just like, okay, boom, we're done. Perfect. Everything we need right there. Right. Like there's a few other guys for sure. Riley's in the mix now and stuff, but first base for a while was kind of that way as well. Just looking at the Razzball player radar, it has gotten much deeper. So that helps too. Still, that shortstop still where it's at, I think. But I think third base and maybe second base is where things are going to be interesting when it comes to draft season for sure. But get your outfielders. That is the most important thing you can take away from this.
At third base, Bubba, where do you think Devers goes next year? You think he comes back into the second round?
I think he's a second round guy. Yeah, I think people saw, like, he's still so young.
He steals a little bit.
I don't think people realize that. And he steals. In the past, he's stolen more than he even did this year. That could come back still. Like, we used to say that about Machado. He doesn't steal anymore. Well, now he's stealing again, people. Like, right, things happen year to year. You don't know what injuries guys got. And, like, just let him be. He's still so young. If Devers can sneak in 10-plus steals to go with everything else he does, he's worth every penny. Every penny. He's okay. This is going to really hurt to say, and people are going to hate me for this, but I'm a humongous Juan Soto fan. For anybody that's paid attention to the show, like, I still go to bat. Yeah. If you want to take him 1-1, I don't argue with you. Rafael Devers, if he can steal 10 bases, is Juan Soto light. Just going to say that.
Pretty much.
Maybe not the walks, but the average in every other category, and you get him in the second or third round. Let's go.
Yeah, I absolutely. And I'm going to miss thinking about him in the 40s and, you know, in that range, because there was a couple spots where I got him this year and I was like, yes, this is great. But Devers is a monster for sure.
All right. Ryan Roof from RotoWire. Awesome dude. Awesome dude. Been on the show with you a few times, been on the show with me as well. Looking forward to the next time he joins the pod. But he says, I need Rob to pull a random pod deck and answer the question. Thoughts on Marcus Semien's likely landing spot next year in 2022 mains. This is a great question because you said it earlier and we've seen it many times. The main event ADP is not like many other leagues you'll be in. So someone's going to believe in what Semien did and is going to reach for him. Where do you think his ADP lands?
Second round.
I think you're right, which is crazy to think about. I think the other question is, where does he land?
I think that's, he goes right back.
He should. Toronto should give him whatever he wants.
Especially with losing losing Austin Martin. I feel like, you know, that was probably maybe their option to, you know, bring up.
True.
And, good point. And you look at Biggio and, like, I don't know, is he garbage? Like, Espinal's playing over him, you know, and I don't know. I think he goes back.
Maybe there would back be, in the second round.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, you take him ahead of Tim Anderson, right? I mean,
yeah, I think you have to, but that's tough because Tim Anderson, I hope he falls. I'd love to grab Tim Anderson in round 3 or 4.
Right.
Great. That's another one of those guys that falls too much because of his batting average, Rob.
Right.
People see that like, oh, I can't take him that early. Yeah, you can. He's going to score 100 runs. He's going to drive in probably 70 or 80. He's going to hit 20, 25 homers and steal you 20 plus bat. Like, right, come on, people. Get over it.
And you know what, too? When you know, you read about, you know, he changes the pro, you know, not changed it so much, but he said since 2017, he's just been trying to get the ball in the air more and more. And Simeon, you know, you, when someone said it and you see it in the numbers, like the fly ball percentage goes up from 39 to 46 to 49, you know, and, you know, the launch angle goes from 15 to 19 to 20 and a half. You know, you see it, you know, you see the max EV go up from 107.2 to 108 to 109.5. Like, he's making an effort to slam a ball in the air and hit homers. He's doing real good at it. You know, he's pulling the ball like 50% of the time. Like, maybe that comes down a little bit, but, you know, he's doing the things that you check off boxes and say, yeah, this is what a good power hitter does. And to add in steals and, you know, 112 runs.
Yeah,
he's a stud. Yeah, I think he lands there because, especially if he comes back to the Blue Jays, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good comp with where Tim Anderson will be. They should be pretty close to each other in the grand scheme of things. So I think that's a very, very intriguing call there. Just for fun, do you think Simeon goes before Manny Machado?
I don't think so.
Okay. What about before Trevor Story, who might not be in Colorado?
Oh, man.
He's a guy that might fall.
I think, see, so I feel like a lot of people will still look at, so the projection for him, unless you like change it, right, will still be such a good projection. Good. So if you're a projection guy and you're looking at it, you're like, oh, Story's still the guy. He's still the preferred guy probably. But yeah, I mean, man, but you also like, you know, how he mailed it in, you know, like,
yeah, it felt like he did. Yes, definitely did.
You know, and I don't know. It's just, you just got to wonder about guys who just mail it in. You know, I get it. They didn't do
it. They mailed it in on him. Screw it. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm going to go get paid.
Yeah, right, right. And so, yeah, do you fall for guy for that? But you also, like, you know, he still have a job to do and, you know, he's obligated to.
I agree.
So close. But I would say, pick a landing spot for Story. Like, what do we say? Like, are the Giants a team that will go after him and put Crawford at second? Or, like, or is that not an option for them? Like, I don't know. Like,
it could be. They were interested in trading for him.
Right.
I think if the Cubs are saying they want to spend money, he'd be an interesting one.
Cubs, right?
Yeah, if they actually spend. I don't believe it until I see it with them and from everything they've done. But they said, and they have it, they'll have tons of money that they said they're going to spend, and he'd be a good one to put in the shortstop position.
Man,
what about the Yankees?
They need a shortstop. But let me ask you something, Mike. Don't you think the Yankees should just probably wait for Ohtani and just make a run at him? Or like a guy, I don't know.
The Yankees, why don't they do both?
Right. I don't know. Those things are done with them.
Like, yeah, they are. Yeah, Ohtani, you think, has to go there. It just makes too much sense.
Right? I think it does, too. But, you know, and there's just a ton of good free agent shortstops, right? So you got
Carlos Correa, I think.
Correa, Corey Seager.
Yep.
Right. So that's... Ooh, what do the Dodgers do? Like, do they shift Turner to, you know, shortstop and, you know, play Lux there and, you know, maybe not make a run at Seager, or do they bring him back? You know, it's just that's four good shortstops.
It's going to be real interesting to see. That's why I think that's why the Giants just said, screw it, we're going to extend Crawford for 2 years for cheaper than any of these other guys, and by then we'll have our stud prospect shortstops up and we'll call it a day.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
I like the Correa to AJ Hinch reconnection.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I like the Tiger team, man. They play hard.
They're building something real nice there.
I love it. And it's one of those teams, you know, we mentioned like Fulmer and Soto. It's just, you know, I don't know if you caught yourself just watching specific teams so much because of these random roles. Like, you know, Floro's in the save and I'm putting on the Marlin game. Like, what's wrong with me? And like, that's you learn so much about these random teams. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like I learned so much about the Tigers, but watching them, I was like, you know, and they bring in these guys like, you know, Derek Hill and Willie Castro, and they're all like good contributors. And I feel, you know, with Torkelson and Green coming up and, Yeah, I like it there.
They got a bunch of pitchers coming up to join Mize and Scooble. Like these guys, they're probably like 2 years away from making some fun happen, maybe 3 years away from actually contending. But by then, Miggy will be off the books. They'll have some Grossman will be off the books. They'll have so much money to spend.
Right.
It's gonna be dumb. Like they could. That's why they can go and get a Correa right now and put him in for like 7 years if they want. So then his last like 3 or 4 years will be prime. Let's go win some stuff.
Right. Like, and you look at a guy like Grossman. Like I think a lot of people question that signing, but you see like when you like what like a good $8 million solid all around player can do for the team. Like he added good value to the team. He added a bunch of wins, but he also just like is a steady presence where you can have these other guys around him, just getting a feel for the majors and Badu, you know, like, you know, getting better.
Well, he's the perfect, like, hey, we're rebuilding, but we want to teach our kids while we rebuild.
Right.
Like, that's basically what you're saying. Like I used to laugh like back in the day, like Omar Vizquel's of the world. Like, yeah, they're washed up, but we're going to keep paying him $8 million a year because he's going to teach these young kids how to play baseball. Especially, and I know it's a different with Vizquel, but especially a lot of the teams that have, like, heavy Latin influence, you see stuff like that. But Grossman's a great example of he's seen it all. He's done it all. He still has game to play, so he's not just, like, throwing in the towel.
Yep.
It gets frustrating when certain teams, like, say, the Marlins or whatever, just don't do stuff like that.
Yeah, right. So,
right. I'm with you. Ryan Ireland has another question for you. He says, also, is Rob's boy McKinstry the new Chris Taylor next year, or is it Lux, or is it Chris Taylor again, who's a free agent? Who do you think that role is for the Dodgers next year?
Very interesting. Chris Taylor is just one of those guys. Like, you know, he's pretty fascinating. He's got great skills, can play everywhere. He's one of those guys that teams are coveting, you know, power, speed, second, short, outfield, wherever he needs to play, you know. It'd be interesting to see where he goes. You know, I don't know where there's a hard landing spot for him. McKinstry kind of showed a little bit this year, but Lux, he's been on a roll in the last 3 weeks. A lot of it doesn't look so great, like in terms of exit velocity and hard hit. It doesn't look like he should be. I know I think his BABIP is. He's not. I know his BABIP is through the roof. But I guess maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe just getting consistent time and getting hits, even if they're not barrels, can bring him confidence and he becomes that guy. But, you know, or like we said, maybe he becomes the full-time second baseman if they don't sign Seager. You know, who knows?
That's where it all starts, is do they bring Seager back or not?
Right. And
then you can start building the rest of the puzzle.
Right. But yeah, and McKinstry might get another shot. I think they like his skill set and I think they like his bat, but I think he had a lot of injury this year. So I think next year he might get another shot.
For sure. Yancey Eaton says, I'd like to take the opportunity to congratulate Rob on an absolutely incredible year in fantasy that includes a bludgeoning victory that was never even remotely close in our TGFBI league. Quote unquote, he kisses the ring. Is there anything he plans on doing differently in fantasy next year?
Different in fantasies. So I think I am going to, well, format wise, I tried cut line. I'm getting rid of that. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I only do the Raz Slam and that's about all I'll do. Like Curtis Jones is awesome at it.
He's sick.
Yeah. I don't have whatever mindset to do that right now.
Yeah. And I just actually don't think, I don't know. It's just odd. It's like it's not a draft champion, and it's not weekly fab, and it's twice a year fab, and then there's the playoff system, and I don't know when to check it. I don't know. It's just anyway, I'm getting rid of that. But I think what I'm going to do different next year is, you know, in this off season, you know, I learned like SGP. You know, I learned what that was about and how it evaluates players. Definitely helped me a ton. Definitely make me understood a lot more about rotisserie. This year, I'm going to think, you know, I'm going to try, I want to learn something else. You know, maybe I'll learn how to do like standard deviation scores or stuff like that. I don't know. I think I'll just want to learn something else. You know, I want to learn another evaluation system and just really just try to understand every single way, like, you know, guys may evaluate players, you know, just want to get better, you know.
All you can do.
Yeah. You just, you know, But I think my first thing is just do a hard recap of my year. Look at free agent drops, you know, where did I mess up? You know, what were my best ads? And just try to really understand what you're doing, right? Because like you mentioned, we're playing so much, you know, we're trying to do the content game and, you know, you don't get caught up in that. And maybe you don't realize what actually you did well. Cause we could say, you know, oh yeah, I got this guy in the 23rd. I got this guy in the 28th, but maybe this pickup in week 8, you really didn't realize what he added for your team, you know? So just, I want to do that. I want to go back in once the season's done and just, you know, try to pick up on things I'm doing well and things I'm doing bad.
No, that's a great starting point for sure. Is not enough people do that and assess from draft season on, like what went right, what went wrong, and why, like, why did I finish fifth instead of first, or why, like, what was the difference in closing the gap, stuff like that. I've already started thinking of certain things in my head that I really want to go look at, because a couple leagues just kind of went south the last like 3 weeks that they're not south, like I'm in fourth and fifth, but I was almost in first type thing. Like, what did I do stupidly to make that happen? Or is it just dumb luck? Some of it is dumb luck, but most of it, there is something you could have done for sure.
Right.
The last question we have here is from Michael Simeone, the Mr. SP streamer. What is one thing you would stress to all fantasy players when it comes to in-season management?
Oh, in-season management. I would stress...
Don't overspend in Fab. No,
just kidding. Yeah, no, seriously, that's, you know, we just mentioned that before. That's definitely huge, you know. Stay in reason and understand, just see, it's simple things, right? Just look at what your league trend is for spending, you know, just if people like the house market, right? Like if like the market is the market, like if you live on a block where every house is 380,000, right? You're not going to get 450 for yours. It's just, you know, like it's just, that's just the way it is. So just take a look around and see what your league is. But, roster resource on Fangraphs, the lineup tracker, I live with that thing. I really do. I like how you can scroll through every day, and right on top too is just versus lefty versus righties, and it's color coordinated, so it stands out. And what I really love about it is that it shows when guys go to the IL and come back. It shows when guys go to the minors and come back. It shows when guys were on the team and went to another team. So you can instantly see, oh, you know, Luis Arias, his PT. His PT was nice. Oh, why did he just have 4 games off then? Okay, 4 games versus the lefty. Or this guy, Rob Ref Snyder, came off the IL. You see this snapshot, right? Just, and I just hound it. Like, all my lineup positions, just pretty much, this is the first stop, you know. Like we mentioned, you know, we got to set the lineups and DCs, you know, you're just like, all right, you go through all this, you see the playing time, and then it leads into Fab. Like, you just kind of understand right off the bat, like, you, without even thinking about it, you know, Mike Moustakas is playing versus all the righties, and, and Suarez playing against all the lefties. Just knowing those simple things can just gain you a ton of stuff. And, I feel like Razzball, I use Razzball this year. It was my first year using them in conjunction with Baseball HQ. Just pull their data and just, you know, try to determine the playing time trend. And also, like, I think what Razzball and Rudy does really well with just having a snapshot of what players might do Monday to Thursday, but don't just look at the numbers and like, and say, oh, this guy is the 6th rated guy, I'm going to play him. Like, just kind of understand why these rankings might be spitting out. Right. And I think that's the best thing. Like, I've always learned from Baseball HQ. Once I start, like, that's where I really became good at fantasy, is because they teach you how to fish. You know, they don't just say this is it and this is why. They'll say this is how you get to a determination on a player. And when you see a projection for Friday to Sunday and you're like, oh, well, why is Luis Garcia like so high this week? Just take your time to understand why. You know, is it because the opposition of the pitching? You know, is it because he's facing 3 righties? Just really you know, digest what things mean. If you don't understand what weighted runs created puck is, look at the glossary. You know, take the time. I think like Jeff Erickson and Scott Enstad, they always say like, it doesn't hurt to look, right? It just takes 3 seconds to look at something. You know, you may be like looking at all these things, and but just like instead of wondering, oh, I wonder if he's playing versus lefties, just go check it. You know,
there's so many resources out there. Like it's definitely doable.
Yeah, yeah. So just get a good routine and stick to it. You know, like you do with your podcasting. It's just you have a schedule and your money with it, and that's it. You know, it's like if you have like habits, good habits in fantasy baseball. You know, just you know, don't walk to the fab line 20 minutes before the lock and just, you know, pick a bunch of guys. I think that's what I love about Vlad's articles is he'll write in it like, hopefully everyone's just looking at the charts and not reading my words, because that's when he puts in like these random nuggets. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like he'll have like a first baseman lifted. He goes, I really want to have him higher, but I want to see if anyone's reading, you know, the words I'm writing rather than look at the chart. And it's true, because so just take that extra step. Take that extra step to understand, you know, the whys of things, you know. Yeah. So that'll be my biggest don't just look for the answer. Don't just, you know, DM Bubba and say, who should I start? Like, no, I'm serious. Like, you know, like we said earlier, like really understand, you know, why maybe some people may be giving this advice, you know, so dig into it.
Yeah, no, we're here to help, but I prefer if you learned things. Like, there's a lot to it, like Rob's saying. It's funny Vlad does that, because I don't do it as goofy as he does, but when I do either my DFS articles or my waiver wire articles for Roto Baller, everyone I know just opens it and clicks, like, hey, he says this guy. If they actually read the things, like especially like DFS, like I tell you how to build part of your lineup if you like with this player in conjunction to it, but they don't ever look at that. And I know it for a fact, because I see what happens, like, well, what the, like, if you read the freaking thing, it's right there. But it's funny, because Vlad's 100% right. They just look for the chart, we're in, we're out, call it a day. So,
and you know what, I'm trying to read a lot more. Like, I've been spending a lot less time on Twitter and just trying to read books, find more peace in my life than the mess that is Twitter. And I've been reading about like everything, a range of things, sports, a philosophy. But I was reading, there was a section about, it's called like the race to conclusion, and how, like, especially now in this time, like everyone wants to be the first one to tweet something, the first one to say something, the first one to have anything on anything. And it's like, it's, and using Google to get quick answers, you know, like, it's prevalent, and it carries into fantasy. You know, like these are all the things we're saying, like the race to find your best lineup or your the best ad. Like, understand what gets you there. You know, don't just look for that final answer. Like, you know, do the work, and you'll get better for sure.
100%. Well, Rob, I always enjoy talking to you, my friend. It's always a good time. Baseball's fun, but just talking to you is good as well. So, we'll do this again soon. Like I said, I'll hit you up after this. We'll schedule this again, talk some players and some more stuff. But a lot of great, just kind of looking back, a lot of philosophy on playing the game of fantasy baseball that I think we can take from this season and going into the next season that people should use before you even start looking at evaluating players, stuff like that along the way. So I truly appreciate this this conversation, as always. And if you have any parting words or where they can find you and all your great work with the Pool Hitter podcast and everything, plug it away.
Yeah, thanks, Bubba. As always, it's great coming on. I love when you reach out. It's always a great time talking to you. But yeah, you can find me at Dead Pool Hitter on Twitter. I have the Pool Hitter podcast. I'm going to be getting right back into it once the season's over, getting into some league recaps with some of my league mates. So in my main event one, I'll have on like Frank Stample. And we'll talk about some things that, you know, happened in our league and, you know, like I said, like the best ads and the worst drops and just trying to like highlight, you know, like we're saying, a philosophy side, like what are we doing wrong? Not even players and how we're drafting. And that, yeah, and just have on some guys who, you know, won a lot of league this year and just try to get inside their brain, you know, and I feel like it was good. I learned a lot just bringing on anyone who just, you know, played in several leagues and like saying, getting Curtis Jones on, like teaching me how to play cut line. And it's cool. You get to learn all these different things. So hopefully you get right back into it once the season's done. And so everyone can get nice and prepared early this year. And, you know, we'll lead them down the road to success again, Bubba.
That's the plan. That is the plan. But until next time, everybody, make sure you check out Rob on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. And check out his podcast, The Pull Hitter Podcast. Always great stuff there. Look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks in Arizona, my friend. It's going to be a great time at First Pitch Arizona. But until next time, everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 404 with Rob DiPietro. Catch you guys later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.